The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 200 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and joining me on a Monday this time around is the great Scott Coleman. What's up, man?
What's up, Brad? Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I apologize to everybody. Little under the weather, not feeling great. My voice is even worse than usual, but I will try to power through. And 200 podcasts. That's pretty crazy.
It is pretty nuts to think about 200 episodes of this podcast, and I would say the majority of them have been like 45 minutes or longer, so that's a long time of talking into microphones about the Atlanta Braves, but here we are. And like Scott said, we were planning to record Sunday night late. I had a Hawks game, which means I could only record late, and because of where Scott lives, that made perfect sense, but then Scott was dying. So here we are on a Monday, and hopefully nothing will happen during the podcast, but I know what's going to happen is that something's going to happen Tuesday morning, but alas, here we are. Not too much, I would say, actual news this week. There was one thing we'll talk about in a second. Ben Sestanovic, I'm going to say his name is now the assistant GM for the Braves. He was hired about a week ago now. He has a 10-year background with the Padres. I have no thoughts on this, but it actually happened. So unless you have a real take, hashtag take, on the assistant GM hire, Scott, we could probably move along, but I wanted to say it out loud. Anyway.
No, I mean, no hot take. I mean, the guy could have been my waiter at lunch today and I'd have no idea.
Exactly.
I think, he's presumably going to be the new Brian Bridges as far as the draft goes. I would imagine that will be a lot of his focus. That's pretty similar to what he was doing in San Diego. Again, I have no information on this guy. He started as an intern and has risen to an assistant GM, so those stories are always cool. But yeah, other than that, that's all I got.
Yeah, I just wanted to at least leave with that because it did happen. I have no thoughts, but we will see what happens there. And I'm sure people that are smarter than we are have opinions, but I do not. The other thing that actually happened that we at least can talk about is that Charlie Culberson is back, sort of. The Braves signed Culberson to a minor league deal earlier, I guess last week as we're talking now, with a spring training invite, and it was reported anyway that he'll earn $1 million if he makes the club at a spring training. For me, that speaks to the lack of market that Culberson had. I know you and Eric talked about that on the last podcast about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago, the last emergency show that we did here. Mark Bowman, to be fair, did note that Culberson, I'm going to quote here from Bowman, fielded a few major league offers, none of which were significantly strong enough to forgo the chance to continue playing for his hometown team, end quote. So it's at least possible that Culberson got a major league offer somewhere. I'm skeptical because, you know, a guaranteed major league offer is better than a non-guaranteed major league offer, but he's made some money in his career, so I guess it's not impossible, and he is a sort of a local product. So, I mean, it's too early to talk about whether he'll make the team or not. Obviously, you know, if you were one of the fans that was really upset about this when it happened, when he was non-tendered, the Braves would have had to tender him at probably around $1.8 to $2 million, and instead they're going to get him non-guaranteed with up to $1 million. So the Braves did a good thing in terms of the actual contract setup. What were your thoughts on this, Scott? And, you know, I will say I have No problem with this whatsoever. I had no problem with the non-tender, which I never talked about on the podcast because that was you and Eric. I have no problem with the non-tender, and I have no problem with this. He's certainly worth a sprint training invite, and if he makes the team, $1 million is fine for him.
Yeah, I was glad they brought him back. As you said, $1 million. I would kind of lean as of December 15th or whatever today is, December 16th, that I would lean towards him that he makes the roster instead of doesn't make the roster. Now, who knows what else is going to happen over the next few months. But for $1 million, we talked about, you know, you and I talked about before the non-tender deadline, he didn't really come up. He really wasn't on either of our radars because the 1.8 million projected figure was so low. You know, for the Braves to get him at $1 million, non-guaranteed, as you said, let him come to spring training, get an invitation. It just kind of, it opens up a roster spot on the 40-man roster for the Braves. I believe, though I don't know all the specifics of contract workings, but I believe because it's a minor league deal, there might be some flexibility with his options. Though don't quote me on that. I didn't look into it before this. So yeah, for $1 million, he was a guy who was certainly liked around the Braves. He fills a role, if especially with the expanded rosters to 26 next year. If he's the last guy off your bench, it's really not, you can do a whole lot worse. And then you talk about what he means to the clubhouse and his versatility and in the bat, even if it's not a great one. Again, it's, you're not counting on him for 150 starts next year. let's hope not, at least. Yeah, for $1 million, why not bring him back, see what he can do. You're really not on the hook for anything if he's just lost a step. And to be completely fair, it will be interesting to see. I mean, the first time he steps in to see live pitching after taking a ball to the face as he did in his last at bat, I mean, that has to mentally weigh on him, right? Like, I don't know how much so, but there has to be some kind of PTSD from that incident. Hopefully it's not something that's going to scare him or end his career prematurely. And he's obviously going to make a full recovery from it physically. But it is something I think to at least keep an eye on, because the first high and inside fastball might give him a little bit of the shakes.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be 31 in April, so he's not, like, over the hill. I think, you know, he's sort of an established veteran. And like you said, if the season started today, with the current roster, he would almost certainly make the team because of his versatility. They don't have a backup sort of do-it-all player like that, other than Camargo. It's kind of like the same archetype. Obviously, very different players, but archetypes are somewhat similar in that they can play everywhere. And that's the biggest versatility and the biggest, I would say, asset for Culberson is that he can play everywhere. He's not particularly great at any one thing. His hitting has been overrated. The clutch stuff has been overrated by some. But he's someone who does bring value in that he can do a lot of things for you. And, of course, he is one of the better position player pitchers in the major leagues.
The offseason of bullpen continues. Charlie Clutch back for the ninth inning.
Exactly. I mean, it's... I heard the podcast that you and Eric did, and I was totally fine with everything you guys said. And listen, I mean, Culberson for $1 million is totally fine if that's what ends up happening. And also, if they upgrade on him and they get somebody better and he's not the best, one of the best 25, 26 guys coming out of spring training, that's okay too. That's part of the appeal of doing a deal like this, is that you don't have to keep the guy. If he's not performing well, like you said, or if he's just upgraded on somewhere else, that's okay too. So from a team standpoint, this is an unequivocal win. I know, you know, I saw some tweets that were kind of funny about how the Braves should have done him better. And it's like, well, I guess, but no. I mean, that's not really how this works. Like, I do think that the Braves wanted him back, and that was kind of the reporting that was out there after he signed, is that the Braves always had this deal on the table, but they were going to kind of let him look for a deal. And it seems like Culberson had a week or so to go out and find a deal, and it wasn't there. And he took the safety net of being in Atlanta. So that's okay. None of that is terribly surprising to me. Last thing I'll say about it. It's just kind of what you would expect. After he was non-tendered, it was like, all right, maybe he'll get a deal. If he doesn't right away, he probably doesn't have one. And that's where we are.
Well, and you know, it does save potentially about $1 million. And if all things equal, and you know, at the end of the day, it is a business, right? And you know, if it's $1 million that then they have to spend in the middle of the season at the trade deadline or whatever it may be, I'm sure that flexibility will be nice to have. But yeah, glad to have Charlie back, and hopefully he's able to put last season behind him and then be a contributing member next year.
Sounds about right. Culberson back, Culberson back, Culberson back. Tell your friends that Culberson is back. All right, Scott, we're going to take a quick early break, I will say. This will be the only one on the podcast, but hold on tight for a word from our sponsor. We'll come right back, talk about winter meetings and everything else that's going on the market right now.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, Scott. We're back. Winter meetings are in the books. And again, fairly quiet for the Braves. They did a lot of work, more work than anybody else in the whole league, basically, before they started. So it's not a huge surprise that it was a little bit quiet for Atlanta in terms of actual deals materializing. Alex Anthopoulos made some interesting comments, I thought, but nothing that was terribly shocking. I'm going to say a couple of things that he did say on the record that I will get your reactions to. The first one is that they're in search of a middle-of-the-order bat, which is not surprising to anyone. He did say, quote, ideally, end quote, it comes from third base, but it could be outfield. He did say that, which I thought was at least eyebrow-raising to a certain extent. They are also prioritizing defense with the 26th roster spot. That's a spot that's now new in the way that baseball is going to be operating. They'll have sort of an extra spot on the roster. And he mentioned backup shortstop as like a pure position there. That could be Hechevarria, by the way, just as a thought bubble in my mind. And the last thing that I will say before I get your response is that he said, and I'm quoting here, if we don't acquire a third baseman from the outside, Riley and Camargo would compete for third base, end quote. And he also said that the team remains, quote, very high, end quote, on both guys. So my top thoughts on those, on that stuff would be that none of that is surprising at all, but it's at least worth pointing out that he did say it into microphones. And that was, you know, what he was able to say, even if it's not surprising, when the GM speaks, it is noteworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. He is the king of saying a whole bunch of words without actually saying anything at all.
It's a skill.
And of course, it really is. I mean, he's pretty good at it. And you listen to his interview and it's like, oh man, he talked for 20 minutes. And then you read through it and it's like, oh, he didn't say anything. You know, the stuff about middle of the order bat. Yeah. No kidding. Whether that's Donaldson or somebody else, they need to go out and get it. The whole thing about Riley and Camargo, yes, it is true that they could be the Braves' third baseman next year, but he also said notoriously, like a week before signing Josh Donaldson last year, that they were perfectly happy with Camargo at third, and then we all know what happened. So it was just a whole bunch of I don't want to say hot air from Anthopoulos, because he has to do those things. He has to meet with the media. And as you said, there was some, I don't know if it was outrage, but some frustration that the Braves didn't do anything at the winter meetings.
Oh, come on. They've done stuff all winter. Like we can't do this. It's so silly.
Yeah. I mean, even after all the teams, you know, Cole signed, Rendon, Strasburg, so on and so forth, all those guys, the Braves have still done, at least from a number, a quantity perspective, they've done far more than just about everybody else. So stuff will happen. I promise you, Anthopoulos was not sitting on the San Diego beach drinking a margarita for those 4 days. And, you know, it's just that they've kind of addressed all of their real needs other than the middle of the order bat. And hopefully they're able to make an inroads during the last week or so in San Diego. And we get some resolution sooner than later.
Yeah. And again, I mean, this is stuff that we all thought coming in. It's not a surprise to anyone or a secret to anyone that the Braves need one more bat in the middle of the order. The Donaldson spot is open and it may be him. We'll talk about him specifically in a second, but that is no surprise. And if they're going to upgrade that spot, the other spot to do it would be the outfield. So him saying that is, again, noteworthy, but not surprising. The defense thing with the last roster spot isn't a huge, you know, talking point necessarily. Mark Bowman did report last week that they are in the market for a, quote, versatile veteran, end quote, for the bench. You know, I can already hear someone saying, that's Charlie Culberson, but they want someone better, it appears, if they can. They checked on Howie Kendrick reportedly before he re-signed somewhere else. Also, Bowman reported that the possibility of Matt Joyce and or Adeni Echevarria coming back would not surprise him, essentially. Echevarria is a one-position player, but it's a good position. And obviously his defense, if they really want to go defense with that spot, he fit in well. He hit more than you would think he's going to hit when he was with the Braves this year. But they could do worse with that spot. And I think, you know, as a defensive upgrade, if they wanted to just have that insurance, because this year when Dansby went down, they didn't love the options, obviously, on defense at shortstop. And having that to plug in was very helpful. But, I mean, yeah, the bench stuff, we'll save a lot of bench talk, I think, for March, because, you know, Culberson is worth talking about now because of the news that was out there. But we just don't know what the bench is going to look like, other than we know backup catcher will be there. And we know that, you know, Duvall or Markakis or both will be there. And other than that, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, they'll find guys. I mean, they will. And so far it's been, I mean, if you look at the players who have signed, the only free agents who have really signed are all big dollar guys. Usually in February is when you see all the utility type guys sign deals for a year or two. Once teams kind of focus on their bigger holes. So yeah, plenty of time to figure out those things you mentioned.
For sure. All right, let's pivot a little bit to the guys who are not currently on the team and some of the reporting that's been out there. Like I said, it's been kind of quiet, I will say. Mark Bowman, who is, I think, the guy that we cite the most, and I personally will say that I trust the most. He's been around forever and only says things that he's pretty confident in saying. He's pretty, he's not like the guy to throw around things. He doesn't tweet all that often, so when he tweets, it carries more weight, in my opinion. And this is, I'm just going to read something that he wrote, actually, last week. Quote, "They don't seem interested in trading for Cubs third baseman Chris Bryant, and signing free agent outfielder Marcell Ozuna feels like it would be an only if necessary backup plan." He also reported, separately, that there is, quote, "some doubt on whether the Braves would offer a fourth year for Josh Donaldson." So we're going to save Donaldson for his own section momentarily, but obviously there's been plenty of discussion about external options, be it Bryant, Nolan Arenado has been posited. Ken Rosenthal actually reported that Kyle Seager could be on the market. Jeff Passan said on Ryan Russillo's podcast that the Braves, quote, "made a run," end quote, at Anthony Rendon, which was a surprise to hear. And then he also said that the Braves are still discussing Nolan Arenado, though he did say that even the Braves internally think the chances are not all that great that they'll be able to get on it, Nolan Arenado. So where are you at on all the external options? You know, trades are sometimes surprising, particularly with Anthopoulos, so it's very possible that they do something that no one ever hears about. That seems to be the MO of this front office. But of the guys who are obvious, your Bryant's, your Ozuna's a free agent, but Bryant, Ozuna, Arenado, like, do you make anything of any of those guys? I guess Kyle Seager, too. Do you make anything of any of those guys as being interesting? Have you seen anything that is noteworthy that you want to shed light on? Or, well, I know we're all just guessing, but anything pique your interest?
You know, I got a ton of questions last week about Bryant, and I'll say this, and who knows what the Cubs front office is actually thinking with him, but I personally just, I do not see a match between Chicago and Atlanta for a couple of reasons. Unless the Cubs are really starting to think rebuild, which just doesn't seem like them for a team that was a couple years removed from a World Series and has some significant money owed to this year's team. You know, who on the Braves would interest the Cubs enough for Bryant? You know, Max Fried. Well, if you trade Max Fried, what are you accomplishing, right? Like, you're addressing the middle of your order, but then all of a sudden you've lost maybe your second best starter on the team. You know, maybe Fulton Nevich would be of interest to the Cubs, but again, you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, unless there's a scenario where you have a really good deal for a starting pitcher, which rarely happens, to the point of where you could trade a Fulton Nevich or a Fried in order to get a Chris Bryant, who is still in the middle of an ongoing grievance too, which is worth mentioning. So there's a very real possibility. I think most people think he's going to lose the grievance and still have two more years of contract control left.
Yeah, that is the general consensus that I poked around a little bit, and nothing firm, but I will echo that. People that seem to be, you know, everybody's guessing to some degree, but most people are guessing that he will not win, which means he'll have 2 years sure. left, but there's at least a chance that it's only one.
And I think until there's some clarity on that, for both parties, both the Cubs, I mean, the Cubs would benefit, obviously, if he has 2 years of control, and teams would have to pay significantly more for 2 years than one. It is worth noting Bryant's defense at third base has not been great the last couple of years. He's also had a couple of injuries. So it's not as if this is a risk-free proposition. He's going to make $18, $20 million this year, probably $25 million in arbitration next. So I know there's been a lot of talk, and I would certainly take Chris Bryant on the Braves, but for those reasons above, and I'm also just not entirely sure the Cubs are ready to tear down or reimagine their roster, considering where that roster is right now. I just don't see a great fit. Maybe they trade Bryant to another team and it's not the Braves. But I've never fully believed that. And the fact that most people around the Braves have said they don't necessarily think there's a great chance of it happening, I guess only increases my skepticism that something would actually happen.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I mean, like you said, Bryant is a good player. There's no question about that. But the matchup is weird in that you would imagine the Cubs are going to want some major league ready talent. Unless they're just in love with Austin Riley, that'd be the only other guy that might get them there, but I don't know why they would do that. It's just kind of weird, the alignment there, and you know, Bowman saying that the Braves don't seem interested in trading for Bryant makes at least sets off some alarm bells for me. The Arenado stuff picked up in a big way, particularly when Passan starts talking about it in public, because Passan, along with Rosenthal, are the two guys who are just by far the leaders in the news game right now. But that's a lot of money. Arenado is good at baseball, but he has some splits that are not. You know, he's still been a good player on the road, but not the same, you know, lights out ridiculous player on the road. And I believe it's 5 more years at about $35 million annually. It's a lot of money.
Sounds like, yeah. Let's see, 8 years.
Oh no, it's 5 more years after the opt out. So it's 7 more years. Sorry.
Yeah,
it's 7 more years because he has an opt out after 2021, and then 5 years after that. So it's a 7-year deal that you'd be securing essentially, but only 2 of it is guaranteed to stick with you because then he can opt out.
Right. Right. So how do you? I know. I mean, I would be first in line to get Nolan Arenado to Atlanta. I know there's some split differences there, but I would just take the talent, and most guys do hit better at home than on the road. So,
and he's also still, the splits are real, but he's still fairly young.
Yeah.
And he also, even if you just assumed that his road splits are going to be his overall numbers, he'd still be a very good player. Like you could question whether he's worth $35 million a year at that number, but I think he's like a career. It's about 120 or so WRC plus.
Yeah. On the last road. 4 years. I mean, he's been crazy consistent overall and all that. Yeah. I mean, so I didn't mean to cut you off, but
no,
yeah, I mean, Arenado, how do you value a guy who is a star player, but could potentially at age 30 get out of his deal? If not, or if he gets hurt and the team is on the hook for that, then you're talking, I mean, that's $35 million for the next 7 years. That is that's Anthony Rendon money, basically.
Yeah. I mean,
so, yeah,
it's almost the exact same deal for guys who are similar age. And I think Arenado, I don't know, Rendon's probably safer than Arenado because of the lack of splits and the lack of all that stuff. But still, Arenado is a elite player. Like, as you said, the consistency with him, I just pulled it up. The last 4 seasons, he's been worth between 5 and 6 Fangraphs WAR. I mean, what are you going to say about that? Like, that's obviously elite production. It's not Mike Trout production, but he's a great defensive player too, which helps. I don't know. He's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he is. He's a phenomenal player. But for the reasons, and it's worth listening, it was about a week ago, I think, when Passan went on the podcast to talk about all things free agency and trades and all that.
It was.
To be clear, this is not like something in the pot right now that's going to happen in the next 24 hours.
And by the way, this makes our job really hard. Anthopoulos, most of the time when stuff gets reported, it doesn't happen with the Braves. And I think that's probably safe to say for across baseball, but how many times in the Anthopoulos era has something been reported and then happened?
Yeah, never. I mean, truly, other than the only one that comes to mind was the Kevin Gausman stuff. And that was one on the trade deadline and two coming from Baltimore, which, I mean, I swear to God, they had like reporters in the front office with them on that day, like as they were making phone calls.
But yeah,
everything's coming out.
And the deadline, like you said, the deadline makes things a lot more, there's a lot more urgency, which kind of leads to more of that reporting chatter. Like, I know there could be artificial deadlines in the offseason, but for the most part, Anthopoulos seems to be in no hurry. I mean, he'll pounce when necessary, but you know, none of this, they don't leak anything. I can tell you that with a certainty in Atlanta. They don't leak anything from the Braves front office. So it's kind of a vacuum, which makes our life difficult, but also I kind of love it. If you're a Braves fan, I would love this, just to say that out loud.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I mean, it's, and again, you know, the good news is as we sit here on December, whatever, There's still plenty of options, right? Like maybe something weird happens with Arenado. The Rockies get desperate. Maybe something happens with Chris Bryant. Maybe, as you said, they really like Austin Riley, or they're enamored with one of the young pitchers, like, you know, a Kyle Wright, Ian Anderson, one of those types. But you have a lot of options, whereas the pitching market has really moved with Cole and Strasburg and Wheeler and Bumgarner. Most of the hitters who are believed to be either available or free agents are still out there, which is good for the Braves. It's not as if they're suddenly scared, you know, looking at the bottom of the barrel and scrambling. Again, I think they're going to get something done. I have a hard time believing that after making all of those moves early in the winter, they're going to roll with like Nick Markakis, Adam Duvall as their cleanup hitter. I could be wrong. But I just have a hard time thinking they make all of these win now. You don't pay big dollars to a bullpen to then go cheap or not be aggressive elsewhere, has been my thought. And I think that we'll ultimately see a pretty significant upgrade. Maybe not at third base. Maybe they get creative and do something in the outfield or shortstop. But yeah, I just have a hard time believing they aren't going to do something big.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. You know, for what it's worth, while we're here, there was some reporting that there were no substantive talks about Francisco Lindor, who's apparently available and out there. Take from that whatever you want to take from it. And there's been some moves for guys who the Braves weren't necessarily in on, like Corey Kluber got moved for like nothing. That was bizarre.
What a weird trade. Super weird trade.
And also, yeah, that was, I still don't understand what happened there, honestly. Like, I can't imagine. That feels like one of those deals that they only talked to one team. Cause it was like, if you went elsewhere and were like, this is what we have on the table, the Braves would be like, wait, we could beat that with ease. I don't know why we wouldn't.
I mean,
do that.
Easily. I do wonder if Kluber's medicals, they knew they were going to be a problem.
Maybe.
And they were negotiating like, hey, when you review this guy's medicals, there's going to be issues. So this is what we're offering, more of one of those kind of deals. Cause, I mean, every team in baseball could have beat that deal.
Yeah, it was, I mean, and I've seen some talk about, you know, the guys are better than you think. Like, okay, I'm not saying that they got nothing for Kluber, but Kluber is an all-star level pitcher that they got very little for. And it was jarring. Everyone had the same reaction, like, wait, that's it? That can't possibly be it.
And best it case, they get a fourth outfielder who can run. And I mean, that the reliever they got, his name is escaping me, but I mean, that reliever is disgusting. Like, you throw, he's like Kenley Jansen from a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be good, I think.
But best case, he is a really good reliever making minimal money for 3 years on what will probably be some 500 Indian teams.
Yep.
So, I mean, that, you know, it, who cares if you have a good bullpen if the team isn't good, you know?
Yeah, that was just a very bizarre transaction. And also, I mean, the one guy who the Braves were linked to, we should at least reference, is that Madison Bumgarner is no longer available because he signed in your backyard, Arizona.
Yeah.
Interesting deal for the Diamondbacks. We don't have to go into all of that, but I will say, as my final thought on Bumgarner, I would not have given him 5 years and $85 million. It's not a ridiculous contract. It's not 5 and 110 like people thought he might get, but you know, it's one of those, it's like, I wouldn't have done that, but it's not outrageous.
Yeah, for sure. Like 5 years and 110, 120 million. Like,
no, thank you.
Some national reporters were speculating last week. Like, yes. No way. Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad deal for Arizona.
It makes more sense for them than it would have for the Braves, by the way, in my opinion. Yeah. I like it more for Arizona than I would have for Atlanta.
And as we kind of talked about after Cole Hamill signed, I would much rather take a 1 year, $18 million gamble on Hamels than a 5 year, $85 million plus a draft pick. On Bumgarner.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I know I think I told you and Eric how I felt about it. I never said it publicly, but I totally agree with that. I mean, you could argue that Bumgarner's a better pitcher, but he's not much better than Cole Hamels. And to lock up 4 more years, and you know, there's somebody in my mentions the other day, and actually more than one person, and you know, making good points, like, you know, it's not all about short term contracts. And I'm saying, look, it's not all about that, but there is some risk associated with Bumgarner for 5 years, and it'd be different if he was what I would describe as solidly better than Hamels, but I would argue that he's not. So if you believe, as some people do, that he's still a super duper star pitcher, then you're probably upset right now. But if you looked at the numbers from the last couple of seasons and put that alongside his age and mileage, you don't probably think that. And if you just think he's a solid middle of rotation guy, which is kind of the way I view him, the deal is not, again, not outrageous, but not one that's like very appetizing to me. He would have helped the Braves. There's no question about that. And for I guess the door was still open. It was kind of surprising me when I was seeing the reports like, oh, they're still in on Bumgarner. Like, wait, what? They just paid $18 million for Cole Hamels. So I guess if you are someone who's a skeptic of the payroll, like the fact that they were still maybe talking to Bumgarner after that is probably encouraging for the money aspect, just being available. But they had to draw the line of sand somewhere. You can't spend too much money on both those guys for this year, I would imagine. So I understand it all.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like, I mean, it's a good fit. I mean, as you said, it's a perfect fit for Bumgarner. He's familiar with the West Coast. He gets to do spring training in Arizona, where he's been his whole career. You know, Arizona's great for kind of the outdoorsy stuff that he likes to do. So yeah, good for him. It's a solid payday. It seemed like a reasonable one given his history, and I think ultimately we're both glad the Braves didn't pay that price.
Yep. There you go on that. We will leave it there for now. Okay, to Donaldson specifically, real quickly here. He is, in my estimation, with Rendon off the market, he is very clearly the number one option in terms of any free agent that's still available. He's the best player available. I know he's a little bit older than some of the guys are, but if you look at all of the major free agent ranking lists, Donaldson is the top player that is still available. And if you just talked, you know, if it was only for 2020, he would be very, very easily the top player available. Like, there is some concern about his, you know, age and, you know, maybe 3-4 years from now, maybe not. But yeah, like just for this year only, he's best player available. So that's, it makes things interesting because you can see some bidding happening. The Rangers are reportedly out on him, which I, you know, I'm not surprised by. But the latest from Ken Rosenthal, who, again, along with Jeff Passan, is probably the authority on this stuff. He said, I believe on Sunday, that the Braves and the Nationals are co-favorites for Donaldson. He did mention the Twins as a possibility. So it's not only a two-horse race. But, I mean, there's nothing new necessarily on Donaldson. But how do you feel about going head-to-head with the Nationals? That'll be fun.
Well, it was kind of like the JT Realmuto stuff last winter where it's like, if he's going to go somewhere, let's not have him go to a division rival. And then, of course, he goes to the Phillies, which was just, you know, kind of a kick in the gut. Yeah, I mean, it's a good situation for Donaldson. It's a good situation for his agent to have two of maybe the three best rosters in the National League are bidding for you right now. And they happen to be division rivals is a good scenario for him. Ultimately, I think I've kind of maintained the belief all year long or all winter long that the Braves will end up getting Donaldson. I just kind of have a feeling on it. I don't have a source inside Donaldson's camp to tell me that, but
wait, you don't?
Obviously, I know. I'm sorry to say, I'm not Paul Crane. There we go. And I think all things equal, and this is what Rosenthal said, that JD wants to stay with the Braves. Will the Nationals come in and use some of that World Series money to get him? Maybe they do. And maybe they offer a contract that there's just no chance the Braves would touch. But ultimately, I think they get something done. Who knows? There's always a chance that you mentioned the Twins. The Twins historically have never spent big money on free agents. So I don't know how much I necessarily buy that. Yeah, the Phillies were once upon a time rumored, and I just worry a little bit because they do have some money to spend, though maybe they did kind of blow all their cash on Zach Wheeler. But yeah, it is kind of the front storyline right now across baseball. As you said, he is clearly the best option there. And then there's a couple of decent backup options, Marcell Ozuna, Nick Castellanos, and a few others. But ultimately, it feels like he's going to make a decision sooner rather than later, and it's one that will obviously have a huge impact on what the Braves do next.
Yeah, I don't think, I know there's sort of a camp that's out there that says it's like Donaldson or bust right now. I am not in that camp. You know, he is the best player. If they sign Ozuna to a reasonable contract, I think he would very much help this team. I think he's good at baseball. Is he as good as Donaldson? No, he's not. But if you can get Ozuna for half the price, I understand that. Particularly if you're going to reassign some of that money elsewhere. But Donaldson is the best player available. In fact, we just got a question on Twitter that I want to sort of morph into a different one and ask you. The question was, would you sign Donaldson right this second to 4 years and 110 if you knew it would just be over?
Oh, no way.
Okay,
no
so chance. I wanted to ask you. I thought you were going to say no. So I'm transitioning now to say, what is the breaking point for you? What is the absolute most money you would see the Braves pay Donaldson where you would not be upset by it? Is it 400?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. In my head, I was going to say like 4 in 92 or 4 in 96, which is 23 or 24 million. I mean, I guess $1 million a year, if that's your breaking point, then
that's the thing about this kind of deal is like, all right, yeah. If you tell me you'll do it for 95 and not 100, it's like, wait, that's $1.25 million per year. Like, what's
right.
the difference?
Yeah. That's parking. That's the parking money that the Braves make in a home game, right? Like, right. So yeah, I mean, very max, I would do 4 in 100. I think ideally, and I think ultimately he's not going to get quite that payday. Maybe the Nats or somebody else goes nuts. I can't envision it. I'll say this. I can't imagine any kind of scenario where the Braves go upwards of 4 and 100 million. I think Anthopoulos is really going to push for 3 years. Maybe they do more like 3 years and, you know, 80 million or something like that at a higher AAV.
Here's one for you. Somebody asked me offline, actually, that I forgot about till right now when you said that. Would you rather pay Donaldson 3 for 100 or 4 for 100?
Oh,
with the current Braves roster and how it sets up, with how cheap Ronnie and Ozzie are, all that stuff, there is an argument. I'm not saying this is the right answer, but there is an argument to pay the 3 for 95.
That's a good
whatever you
yeah.
want to say it is.
Yeah.
Like 3 years and a lot more annual value, or 4 years and 100 million.
So
it's
like
an interesting question. Like
yes,
390
like,
or 4 for 100.
Ooh.
I would choose 3 for 90.
I would do three. I think if it was 390 or 4 100, I think I would do the 3 and 90. Yeah. I mean, I think you can do that because you know that you're going to have significant money coming off next year with Hamels and
yeah.
Melanson.
I mean, your payroll is not going to be in trouble next year for sure. I mean, eventually you have to pay Freddie again. He's going to get a lot of money.
But not that much more than what he's already.
That's what
made.
I mean.
I mean, he's making
probably
like 10
million. He'll probably get around 30, provided he's still incredible when he signs the deal. I imagine he'll get $30+ million a year. But again, this goes back to what we talked about at the time. Like having Ronnie and Ozzie for the money they have them on gives them so many outs that I would argue that 3 for 90 is almost better than 4 for 100. I mean, it's all semantics to some degree, but I am. You know, if you're worried about the age, why just give them more money up front and wipe it all away? Because they clearly are in the market now, which means they know there's so much steam now that there now is no doubt in my mind that the Braves are willing to pay him $25 million a year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they wouldn't still be in it if not.
Yeah. If it was no chance they were going to do it, I think we would have heard by now that there's no way we're paying that kind
of
cash.
And I mean, so if we know that now, and that means payrolls go into like 160 or more, you know, that's a good thing to know, number one. But number two, I mean, the semantics are out there. I mean, like you said, it would probably take, I'm assuming some stuff here, which is probably not a good idea, but I think it's going to take a real overpay by somebody else for him not to come back. Like,
I agree.
It will surprise me if we get a notification on Wednesday of this week that says Donaldson signed for $490 with the Nationals. Like that will surprise me. You know what I mean? Because that's a deal where I know the Braves may not want to go 4 years. There have been a couple reports about that they would prefer not to go 4 years. When obviously they wouldn't. You know, every team's going to prefer not to go 4 years on Donaldson because of his age. So that's not a huge surprise, but. I feel like the options in my head, and I could be wrong, are he signs with the Braves or he signs a deal that makes us all go, all right, I get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I would be pretty, if it's a reasonable deal, and at least, you know, reasonable isn't open to interpretation.
Yes,
but
it is.
if it's kind of what everybody suspects, everybody from you and I and everybody to MLB trade rumors to MLB reporters, yada, yada, yada. I would be very surprised if everybody goes, oh, that's a reasonable deal, if it's not the Braves. I think you nailed it there. But I also don't think that it'll come out where he signs a deal and everyone goes, oh my God, that's so much money. And the Braves are the team that ended up signing him.
That's the question that we got. I'm not trying to pick up the person that asked it. Like, if it is 4-1-10, it's not going to be the Braves. I don't think. I could be wrong. I could be wrong again. But I feel like they're
really surprised.
I feel like there probably is a line in the sand for Anthopoulos, and I could be wrong about that. But I feel like there probably is a number in his head that he's not going to go past probably because of ownership or whatever, but there probably is a number that they're not going to cross. This is not the Yankees with Gerrit Cole where they're just going to not stop until they get him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, well, and you are talking about a 34-year-old third baseman who, you know, has historically been healthy, but he did have the health scare last year.
I was going to say, I'm glad you said that because people, and I think I saw you yelling about this too on Twitter. There's this notion that Donaldson's injury prone, and that's just not true. Like, it's not at all true.
He was the most durable player in baseball for 5 years.
He had one season of injury issues, which means we had to be worried about it last winter because justifiably, he's just had the injury when we were talking about this last winter, but he was healthy all season this year, like to the point where we were surprised how much he played. And he seems to be fine. I mean, the age is the concern. It's not the durability would be what I would say. Age is a problem
sure.
for guys.
Yeah, getting older and, you know, power hitter like him, the way he uses his legs to swing. I mean, yes, though that's the concern. It's any player can get hurt. I mean, well, again, you talk about durability. I mean, Donaldson played like 150 plus for 5 years in a row, and then he just randomly got hurt and missed almost all of 2018. There was no way to predict that was going to happen, and then played 145 last year. So if injuries were predictable, then everybody would account for them, right? I mean, you just don't.
Yeah, I mean, again, we were surprised. I know I was surprised. I'll speak for myself. I was surprised to see how much he played this year because he played 155, by the way. Not 145, 155 this year. Yeah. That was jarring for a number of reasons because we thought they were going to be easy on him, and they were not easy on him. But still, he was – it's worth pointing out, Donaldson was awesome last year. We talked about this a lot, but the guy – was a 5-win player last season. I know this is just one metric, but the Fangraphs value projection had him at $40 million in value last year. Now, you can't assume that every year moving forward. I will be the first to say that, but he was a $40 million player last season.
Yeah. I was surprised when I looked at maybe a month or two ago, looking back, I think right after the season ended, I was surprised. I mean, maybe you just don't appreciate greatness on a daily basis and, or you just kind of go, oh, yeah, JD's been really good this year. But then you look at the end-of-year leaderboards, and, yeah, he was a top 20, top 25 player in the game, or at least position player last year in the game.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a 5-win player, you are an all-star, essentially. Not you're not always on the all-star team, but you are an all-star-level player if you're worth 5 wins over
right,
the season.
Yeah, you should be an all-star.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you are. And whether the positions break down that way or the voting or when it happens and all that stuff happens. But if you were to go back at the end of the season and name the top 30 players in baseball, he would have been on the list. Position players, anyway. Like, top 50 probably overall player in baseball, which is, you know, not a small thing. That means you're elite. Like, he was awesome this year. And the Braves just happened to have three of those guys, which is really good. But, yeah, Donaldson being back would be good. I feel like we're, as you mentioned earlier, we're sort of in Real Muto territory to some degree. This time it feels a little bit less silly because Donaldson was actually on the team last year. And the Braves, I think, do have a bit of a leg up in this one in the way that they didn't with Real Muto. So we're going to keep talking about Donaldson, I feel like, every week until the end of time. But there's more of a reason this time, I think.
Well, and with, you know, because JD's a free agent, he obviously has a say, whereas Real Muto was just going to go wherever the market.
It was a bidding war, whereas Donaldson could conceivably take less money to stay in Atlanta. Is he going to do that? I don't know, but I can already read the report that comes out the next day that says Donaldson left $10 million on the table to stay in Atlanta. That wouldn't stun me at all.
Yeah.
So he seems to like it, and that's...
Well, and he's from there, his family. There is a great video if people didn't see it. If his mom, it's on, I think, MLB Instagram and his Instagram for that matter. If he told his mom, if she stopped smoking for 2 years, he'd buy her a Maserati, and he bought her a Maserati. So,
and he did. Yes.
to make $23 million last year playing baseball and have God knows how much money coming your way in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. It helps to be almost assured to make $80 million more in your career. Maybe even more than that. So that's
just a couple.
Nice.
Yeah, a couple dollars there. You mean you don't drive a Maserati, Brad?
I do not. Nor will I ever, almost assuredly. I can't imagine a career path that I would go down where I'd actually make any sort of money towards that.
Maserati money. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different kind of class that I occupy. We've covered some ground here, Scott. Anything that we have not touched on that you would like to touch on? I feel like in the near future, we'll probably have to do a mailbag episode because we're going to be out of rumors to discuss. It's going to happen. We're moving slowly here in the offseason now after a frantic start to the offseason. There will be a week or two that we skip. You know, last week we didn't do a new podcast because we had the emergency podcast. But, you know, every week or two we'll have a new show and hopefully have some content to fill it. But anything that you want to talk about that we haven't talked about yet?
The Braves signed Rafael Ortega to a minor league deal.
They did after they released him. By the way, he was not non-tendered. I got mad about this. He was not non-tendered. That was not a thing. He was released. He was released, people.
Yeah.
Released. They snuck him in the non-tender press release, but yeah. He was not non-tendered. He was released. Just
they just got him. Yeah, off the 40-man roster, which again.
And by the way, we saw that coming. We talked about it, I think, at some point. It was a pretty obvious move. And also, bringing him back, minor league deal, is also fine. Ortega is someone that, you know, we saw this year. If you get three injuries, he could be useful for you. And until you have three injuries, he shouldn't be on the major league team. So he's sort of a 4A player, and he's a good piece to have in Gwinnett for emergencies. And I'm not trying to crap on him because he had the one huge swing this year that helped the Braves.
Yep.
But yeah, no big deal there. And I'm glad you pointed that out because I forgot. But that was huge news to end the
podcast. I read your notes. I read your podcast notes.
Oh, and the other one was John Heyman, who is always reliable. Chuckle. Reported that the Braves did check in on Hyunjin Ryu. That I wanted to point that out too.
Yeah, I know. Actually, a couple people have asked me about him. I think what I kind of gather on that is he wants to stay out in California, whether it's with the Dodgers or the Angels or the Giants. Just with the Asian market that he has and everything like that. People are like, why wouldn't the Braves get him? I think that might be one of those kind of two to tango things. Now, maybe nobody wants to pay him out here, but I would have a hard time believing that. So,
well, and also Heyman, I mean, this is now public knowledge basically, but Ryu's a Boris client, and that means Heyman's tweeting about him. That's not a big surprise.
Yeah. Not a surprise. Checking in on a player is not headline worthy.
I usually don't like go in on that kind of stuff, but the Heyman Boris thing is just so transparent that everyone talks about it. So I will be free to talk about it on this podcast. If you don't know this, John Heyman breaks Scott Boras news because he leaks stuff for Scott Boras. It's like the most obvious thing in the history of the world. He got to break all of the big news when normally Rosenthal and Passan basically break everything if stuff gets broken. And then it just so happens that the Boras clients get broken by Heyman. Not a coincidence.
Yeah, he gets like a 15-second jump. Like if you look at the timeline for those things, I swear, like Boris has his assistant send a text to Heyman, count to 15, and then and then send it to Passan, Rosenthal, and every other national reporter there is.
Yeah, so there you go. I'm not trying to go in, but it is what it is. Okay, well, Scott, I think we've covered some ground here. About 45 minutes in, that's plenty of time on a December podcast. Again, you know, programming note stuff. I'm not sure we're going to have a podcast every single Sunday in the offseason because we just won't. Stuff will happen. But Christmas is coming too. We'll probably skip one at some point during the holiday break here. But if there is news, I assure you that within a day or two at the most, we will have an emergency podcast. As we've done every time, like when Hamill signed, I wasn't available. So Scott and Eric went to the bat phone and recorded a podcast. So hopefully that's... Oh, and by the way, there's a new Road to Atlanta that is listenable. The guys are back, which I really enjoyed. That sort of hopefully held you guys over until this podcast because it had been a while and Eric and the crew got back together and recorded this week. So if you missed that podcast, go back and listen to it. It was fun. I listened to it. Those guys have fun.
Yeah, no, those guys, if you're interested in Braves prospects, nobody does a better job than them. So yeah, be sure to give that a listen.
And the same feed. So if you subscribe to this podcast, which you should on whichever podcast player you want, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, all those places, whichever one you choose, Road to Atlanta is in the same feed as us. So you get it all for the low, low price of $0. Just click the button, and we thank you for your patronage. Scott, thank you for joining me as always, my friend. We will talk soon, I'm sure, and now you can go to sleep, as I hope, to rest off of your illness and all that stuff.
I've got a big bowl of soup and a pillow with my name on it.
There it is. That's one heck of a sign-off to a podcast on a Monday night. It's also like 6 p.m. where you are right now, right?
I live a wild life out here.
That's quite a Monday evening happening in the state of Arizona. As for everybody else, one more time, subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend or two or three about the show, and we will see you later on.